Welcome to Political Rewind. I'm Bill Nygut. Thanks for being with us for today's show. We're coming to you from all over the place this afternoon. I'm in the Savannah Bureau right now of GPB because tonight we are going to be doing our show, recording our show in front of a live audience here in Savannah. We've got a lot of people signed up to come see the show. And if you're listening right now and planning to join us tonight, we're really looking forward to talking with you and having the opportunity to hear about the issues that are driving the election forward right here on the in coastal Georgia. In Washington, we have Kyle Hayes. Kyle, you know Kyle, who's been a panelist on our show on any number of occasions before, as the founder of and a leading voice on Peach Pod, which is a podcast that talks about Georgia politics, even though he's now living in Washington. Kyle, you're coming to us from NPR up there. Thanks for being with us.
Yeah, great to be back with you.
And at home in the Atlanta studio, we have Kevin Riley, the editor of the AJC. Kevin, thanks for being with us today.
Always a pleasure to be here, Bill.
And because we're going to focus today on the issues of health care as they've emerged in this election, we're really pleased that we have Andy Miller, who is the editor-in-chief, the founder. I think you're all the titles, Andy, at Georgia Health News. And we should point out that one of the reasons Kyle is here on today is because in his day job, he works on healthcare policy issues for a think tank in Washington. And we're also joined this time in Atlanta by the AJC's Washington reporter Tamar Hallerman, who just literally stepped off a plane to be in Atlanta to cover the last week of the elections in Georgia, right, Tamar?
I finally show up in person, Bill, and you're not even here to greet me.
You should have seen the crowds at the airport to greet her, though, Bill.
All right, as I said, healthcare has become one of the most significant issues, certainly in the Georgia governor's race, but also in races, especially congressional races across the country. It's interesting that literally in the minutes before we went on the air, I turned to Politico on my laptop, and the lead story is a picture of Stacey Abrams and Brian Kemp standing together in the debate they did at our studios last week. And the headline says, red state governor races could bring Medicaid expansion to millions. So this is a subject that is very much on the minds of Georgians, as it is on voters in other states as well. So with all that in mind, why don't we start really digging in to the issues that matter in terms of health care? Let's start with Medicaid expansion. Andy, that's been a big issue from the very start of the race. Stacey Abrams had said that she is going to talk about Medicaid expansion over and over because she believes it is so crucial. It appears that Georgians agree with her. Kevin Riley, I think your poll showed that, most recent poll showed that about 75% of voters in Georgia want to expand. That includes 79% of independents, 51% of Republicans. So your polling, Kevin, says this is a big issue for Georgia voters.
Yeah, I think it is by far the number one issue, certainly for Democrats, and one of the biggest issues in the race. And it's an issue that we're going to talk about this. It's hard to pin people down on. I mean, we think the Democrats think this, we think the Republicans think that, but it's all changing and shifting even as we speak.
All right, Andy, so let you kick this off. Check me if I have my figures correct. The Affordable Care Act, which allows states to expand Medicaid to adults with incomes up to 138% of the poverty level, around $16,000+ for a single person, is in effect in all but about 19 states, right?
Well, it's been adopted, Bill, by 33 states,
right.
Recently Virginia, and before that recently Louisiana. And it's also as a ballot referendum in three more states this year. Nebraska, Utah, and Idaho have it on. Are going to be voting on it to tell their legislatures this is what we want to do. So it's only increasing across the country.
So I was kind of stunned as I did some research getting set for all of you who are experts on this subject to learn that in Georgia, the adults who are not disabled or elderly cannot qualify for Medicaid unless they have $7,400 for a family of three, annual incomes of $7,400 for a family of three. When you go above that threshold, am I right, Andy? You are no longer eligible for Medicaid.
Medicaid in Georgia, Bill, covers very few adults. The ones it does are pregnant women and people with disabilities. But essentially, if you are among the working poor right now, because we haven't expanded, you know, there's hundreds of thousands of people that are in that coverage gap and can't afford insurance and are uninsured.
Just to be clear, though, Andy, I mean, does Georgia set that standard or is that a federal standard?
The feds set the standard on the federal poverty level. And
okay.
So the issue in the coverage gap is you have people who make enough to qualify for subsidies in the health insurance exchange under Obamacare. But there's plenty of people that don't make that level of income, but they also don't qualify for Medicaid on the other end because they make a little bit too much. So these are people, part-time folks, may work 20, 30 hours a week, something like that.
Kyle, so Abrams' argument is that among other things, aside from insuring an additional around, she says around 500,000 people if you expand Medicaid in Georgia, she says it would also be a big help to rural communities, rural towns that are really struggling. And her argument is that the feds are paying 90% of the costs of healthcare when you expand under Medicaid. How long will that 90% go on? Because, of course, Republicans argue that eventually the feds are going to dry up their money and the states will be stuck with the costs.
So that 90% under current law, it would go on in perpetuity. That's the deal that is in the Affordable Care Act for Medicaid expansion specific to that population. I think what often is not said in Republican concerns over that money going away eventually is that their representatives in Washington spent much of 2017 pursuing an Affordable Care Act repeal bill that would have rolled back the Medicaid expansion and would have basically cut a check to each state for their Medicaid program and then let them do what they wanted to do with it. You know, the politics there is that, as far as I can tell, Democrats want this 9-to-1 match to continue for Medicaid expansion. Republicans are the party that wants to see that change, and they've been trying to do that in Washington since 2016.
Well, Tamar, that's a really good point that Kyle makes, because when Republicans were trying to repeal Obamacare, had they succeeded and had that federal subsidy gone away, it might have given proof to the argument that Governor Deal made from the very beginning of ACA that the state, that Georgia would end up covering the costs of all of this, which is why he didn't expand. But as Kyle just pointed out, the Republicans were not able to defeat Obamacare, so the match is still in place.
Yeah, exactly. A big proponent of this this change under the Republican plan was Tom Price. He was the one who really loved this idea of block granting Medicare. Medicaid. And, you know, they built it as a way to kind of save, you know, not only save money for the federal government. They always talk about the, you know, the big increases in federal health care costs, but they also said it was a way for states to kind of determine how they wanted to run the program.
So Brian Kemp says this, the solution, talking about health care, of course, is not more government. He wants what he calls a patient-centered plan, and then he goes on, for Georgia, not California. Andy, Brian Kemp took some criticism throughout the earlier stages of the general election campaign, because while Abrams had a fairly extensive Medicaid expansion plan that she was promoting, Brian Kemp was a little bit more careful. He was a little slower in putting out a plan of his own. And I think there are people who still think his plan is not fleshed out to the extent that they can really put their arms around what he plans to do. Is that fair?
I think that's fair. I think he's talked about raising the tax credit for donations to rural hospitals from $60 million to $100 million. That's a popular program, obviously, for rural hospitals, bottom line.
Well, explain what that program accomplishes.
Well, what it does is for a business and an individual, they can designate $1,000, whatever, to a rural hospital, and that becomes, that $1,000 becomes a tax credit on your state tax returns. And it goes right to the bottom line of the rural hospital. Now, it's been a very popular program this year because they raised the tax credit amount from 90% to 100% of your contribution. And so now it's taken off. And the $60 million is almost subscribed to, and there are a lot of people who want to raise it to $100 million, including Brian Kemp.
So to ask you one more question about this.
Yes.
You say it accrues to the bottom line of the hospital. So if I give $1,000 to a hospital in a rural county, what will they use that money for?
Well, it's basically for operating the hospital. It could be for supplies, could be for to upgrade its equipment. But there's been an issue with it in the fact that we don't know exactly how hospitals are spending that money. And there's been some people that want to see more updated reports that hospitals say, okay, we took our million and purchased a new x-ray machine and a new CAT scan, whatever, but to spell out how they're spending the money.
Okay, so, and I throw this out to the first person who wants to respond, while that sounds like a plan that could gain traction in the General Assembly, especially the Republican-controlled General Assembly, it doesn't necessarily equate to solving or helping solve a problem that people in rural Georgia talk a lot about, which is delivering health care services. This may help a hospital with some expenses here and there, but am I wrong to suggest that it doesn't necessarily mean there's suddenly a surge of services to the people who live in those communities?
Well, I think the most important thing about it is that it doesn't mean that people living in rural communities would gain health coverage. So they wouldn't have the ability to go to either their hospital or their doctor unless
Right.
they could pay for it out of pocket.
Right.
And that, I think, is the big difference between the rural hospital tax credit as a solution to rural healthcare problems in Georgia versus Medicaid expansion, is one gives you coverage in Medicaid expansion and one does not. And the interesting thing is the numbers work out with that is under Kemp's plan, we would be giving up $100 million in revenue for the rural hospital tax credit. The Medicaid expansion, I've seen various figures, but they kind of seem to land around about $250 million a year to do Medicaid expansion. That money would bring in $3 billion in federal funds
each year. Yeah, because of the federal match. Kevin Stacey Abrams has been quoted as saying she thinks her plan would probably cost the state about $300 million. And she says kind of vaguely that she would pay for that through taking back money from, I think, charity care in some communities. She probably has talked about other programs they could get the money back from, but I haven't heard much about that from her.
Well, the best line she's had, though, right, is the line where she said, "Why, if someone came up to you and said, if you give me $1, I'll give you $9,
right,
which is the ratio. And I think that that sort of drives it home. And, you know, in a way, the Republicans, you know, from the beginning were very anti Affordable Care Act, anti, as they termed it, Obamacare. And I think the whole thing got caught up in that, where we've seen a change in the polls, right, Andy? I mean, and Tamar, where people were against Obamacare, but they were for key provisions of it. And
Absolutely.
Now that's even shifted. Now they're, in Georgia, more people are for
Obamacare. The Affordable Care Act is more popular than ever before, especially the provision for pre-existing conditions. That's always polled very well
All
among
right.
Americans.
So, let me ask what I grant you, it may be a very naive question. Medicaid expansion, why do we think that suddenly as many as 75% of Georgians want Medicaid expansion? It's not like I see bumper stickers that give me a very clear, quick message: if you expand Medicaid, you'll benefit in this way or that way. Is it altruism? I know you don't poll for this sort of thing, Kevin, but why has Medicaid expansion, helping the poorest of Georgians get coverage, what's driven it so high up the list? Anybody have any speculation about that?
I mean, one thing that's been interesting is I think people, I think things really started to change last year when Republicans in Congress got very serious about repealing the Affordable Care Act. And I think people finally realized, oh, I could lose something. It's a little different in Georgia where they didn't expand Medicaid. But when we talk about something like pre-existing conditions, all of a sudden, oh, wait, this has been really helpful to my family and my pocketbook. Oh, and you want to take that away from me. That's an argument you heard from Republicans when Congress was initially debating the Affordable Care Act. It's really hard to take something away from people once they get it.
Yeah. You know, Kyle, it sounds as if maybe that's what part of this is that Obamacare itself became more popular. The notion of pre-existing conditions, which we're going to talk about in a few minutes, suddenly became more popular. So maybe Medicaid just rode along with the overall sudden increase in popularity of ACA.
Well, and I think the other thing to add is that Medicaid does provide good coverage for people who are on it. There's almost 2 million people in Georgia who are on the Medicaid program in the state. And research that has looked at Medicaid expansion has shown improvements in self-rated health status, having a doctor in expansion states like Kentucky and Arkansas versus non-expansion state in Texas.
And so, you actually wrote a piece on just that subject on how important Medicaid is for poorer people who without it forego many of the most important health services that they should be taking advantage of.
Yeah, low income adults in expansion states, the states that have expanded Medicaid, they tend to report to be in better health. They have fewer unmet medical needs. They don't skip doses of medication versus as compared to these low-income adults in states like Georgia that have not expanded Medicaid.
All right. I want to go back for a couple of more minutes before we move on to another aspect of healthcare to what Kemp wants to do, because there's another important provision that we sort of touched on lightly, but I think we should help our listeners and me, for that matter, understand a little better. Kemp talks about waivers. We mentioned that before. And one of the waivers he says would be important to Georgia is very similar to what they did in Wisconsin, which is a program the feds would allow the state to use some $200 million this is what we talk about when we talk about reinsurance, I think, Andy, for people. This would be subsidies for people on the exchanges, the Obamacare exchanges, right?
Well, this would help insurers, this reinsurance program,
right.
This would help insurers pay for really high-cost medical care.
Right.
In other words, those individuals that may have a cancer or a heart condition that racks up really high bills, reinsurance would have a pool of money for insurers to recoup some of those expenses in those high-dollar individual patient cases.
But the most important thing, right, that the waivers do Andy, or that it gives political cover. Instead of expanding Medicaid, politicians are able to say, well, we're not doing it. The feds aren't telling us how to do this. We're going to do it in the uniquely Georgia way or the uniquely Wisconsin way. And waiver could, we talked about it before we came on the show, could mean almost anything, right?
Right. It could mean the Georgia Chamber of Commerce plan, which looked a lot like Medicaid expansion. Of course, they didn't call it that. They called it, I can't even remember what they called it, but they had work requirements for beneficiaries who would gain coverage, but essentially it looked pretty much like Medicaid expansion. Grady has a waiver idea that's more targeted to uninsured in Atlanta, but there are waivers, all different types. They need special federal permission in order to go ahead and pursue them.
All right, but Kyle, while it sounds like it could be very important for people with high who do have significant health issues and are paying higher rates because of it, and by the way, we will still get into pre-existing conditions in a couple minutes, the waiver that Kemp is describing is not an answer to expanding Medicaid, because it doesn't expand the number of people in Georgia who would suddenly be eligible for Medicaid.
That's correct. So there's basically two kinds of waivers that I think are central to this debate. A waiver in Medicaid, which is what some other states have used to expand their Medicaid program, and then this waiver for reinsurance that we're talking about that Kemp is proposing. Stacey Abrams is also basically proposing the same idea in this instance. And so this waiver is squarely targeted at people who buy insurance on the Affordable Care Act health insurance exchanges and bringing more stability to that market. And it is not a solution to Medicaid, or in my opinion, it's also not a solution to the woes of healthcare in rural Georgia, because this problem is just different than the problem that you're experiencing in rural Georgia.
Before we get to our break, we are coming into the enrollment season, Andy. And so we now in Georgia have four insurers across the state. Have I got that right?
Right. We have four insurers, but they're not all across the state. There are in different regions. Yeah, but it's the same four as we had last year.
So one of the things that's interesting about this is people go to the website, to the federal website, to sign up, they're going to notice what the rates are this year. And of course, Tamar, last year when Congress was debating the abolition of ACA, the warnings were prolific that people were going to pay more and more money, that the system was falling apart, that your costs for being insured were going to continue to increase. That was a big reason they sold to Americans the fact that ACA should be overturned, wasn't it?
Exactly. You heard a lot of Republicans talking about skyrocketing premiums for folks. And for many years, that was true. We saw that on the exchanges. But what was pretty remarkable is that this year, at least two of our four insurers in Georgia mentioned that rates would go down slightly.
Yeah, I was interested in reading the Kaiser Family Foundation report on this, which we ought to post on our Twitter account, Robert. We'll get that out so people can look at it. In Georgia, the silver plan is the plan you believe we should look at first and foremost, right, Andy?
Low-cost silver plan is basically the benchmark plan. Yes.
All right, so people are going to pay a bit more on the silver plan. They're going to pay about $40 more than they were. If they had the bronze plan, they're actually going to pay less. And the gold plan, I think their costs go up only up to about 7%. So these are increases, but they're not the sort of terrible crisis moments that we were told by Republicans would happen.
Right. A year ago, don't forget that we had like 50% increases in premiums. But this year, it's much more moderate. And one thing I think we've learned is insurance companies are making money on this product now. And that's one of the reasons why you see a little bit more competitive rates.
Let's do this. I'm sitting here in the Savannah Bureau. Robert Jimison is running the board here. He's looking at me and he's saying, when are you going to take a break? Now, Robert. This is Political Rewind. We'll be right back.
Hey, this is David Green, host of Morning Edition. I'm here to talk with you about that poking feeling, the one that keeps reminding you to support public radio. You can support the programs you love by donating your used vehicle. That old car or truck could be worth hundreds of dollars to this station. All you have to do is call, and you might even receive a tax deduction.
Go to gpb.org/cars or call 877-GPB-1-CAR, and thanks.
Welcome back to Political Rewind. I'm joined today by Kevin Riley. It's Tuesday. The editor of the AJC is with us. Andy Miller, who is the editor-in-chief, founder of Georgia Health News. Kyle Hayes, he is a health policy expert, and he does Peach Pod, which is a terrific podcast about Georgia politics. And Tamar Hallerman has flown down to Atlanta to cover the last week of the congressional race. And Tamar, you told me that you're going to be right down here in Savannah, where Robert, Tom Faust, and I are right now. You're going to be covering, what, the vice president when he comes in on Thursday?
Yeah, I'll be at the rally in Savannah with Brian Kemp, and he's going to be making a bunch of stops in southeast Georgia on Friday, so I'm going to tag along for some of that.
All right, we will get the people of Savannah ready for you. We'll try to have a big party ready, waiting for you.
Warn
when
them.
You come.
Well, don't forget, I mean, people can subscribe to the digital edition of the AJC in Savannah, and in fact, anywhere in the state and anywhere in the world, so they could read tomorrow every day.
There
That's
you
a
go.
Good hook.
All right, let's move on. And Tamar, I really do think you're the right person to start with on this. Pre-existing. Well, before I get to you, Andy, what are pre-existing conditions? How have they operated under ACA?
All right, let me take you back before the ACA.
Okay.
All right. So if you had an asthma, and your child with an asthma, if you had diabetes, if you had a cancer in your background, if you had a heart condition, you would have trouble either A, getting an insurance company to actually offer you a policy, or B, paying for that policy. You could pay as much as your monthly mortgage on a health insurance policy that would cover your particular condition. And there was a lot of talk about high-risk pools, et cetera, to help these people. And some of that worked, but they were underfunded. And in our case, in Georgia, they were never funded. So the Affordable Care Act comes along, and it basically allows, let's say if Kevin and I are the same age and I have diabetes and he doesn't, we still pay the same amount in terms of a premium every month. So tens of millions of people who have these health conditions suddenly don't face discrimination based on that health condition in terms of what they pay or the actual coverage.
Tamar, pre-existing conditions was one of the great shibboleths in the Republican effort to overturn ACA, that along with the individual mandate.
Yeah, exactly. And there was a lot of concern as they were going through the motions last, oh gosh, spring of 2017 in the House to repeal and replace Obamacare. And if I remember correctly, going back to that crazy period, there was a last minute effort to try and address some of that because there all of a sudden was a ton of concern about whether people would kind of lose that coverage. And it's something that we saw a lot of the Democrats, a lot of these first-time candidates really riled up about Donald Trump challenging Republican incumbents in places like the Atlanta suburbs, who a lot of them, that was their central argument. Somebody like Carolyn Bordeaux in the 7th District in Gwinnett and Forsyth, she made that the centerpiece of her campaign from day one. And it's something that we've seen mimicked in a lot of other races, too. And it's something that in our polling, in AJC polling and in national polls I've seen, too, that voters really like about the ACA and a top issue for them. So,
Just to be clear, as we sit here today, there are many states attorneys general who have joined in an effort in federal court to have the Affordable Care Act repealed.
There are 20 attorneys general. You're right, and which, by the way,
including Georgia.
That's what I think, Kevin. You go ahead with that. Chris Carr, the attorney general, who is running for re-election against Democrat Charlie Bailey, he joined that lawsuit. He signed on to that lawsuit, didn't he?
And if that lawsuit is successful, the law, the pre-existing condition protection under the law would go away, right, Andy? I mean,
that's what the White House is arguing. If they argue as a part of this lawsuit that if the mandate goes away, then the pre-existing condition protections also go away.
And so, a little backup on that, the GOP's tax law from last December, it didn't entirely repeal the individual mandate, but it took away the tax penalty. So it essentially defanged that. And so I think that's kind of where this court case comes in and saying, well, if there's no actual penalty here, then you can't defend the pre-existing conditions part of it. And that's what Jeff Sessions over at the Justice Department essentially argued as well. We're not going to defend this in court.
So, Kyle, Republican congressional candidates around the country and in Georgia as well are arguing that they're the ones who will protect pre-existing conditions. The president at one point sent out a tweet in which he said Republicans will totally protect health insurance coverage while Dems will not. What is going on?
Well, I mean, I just think, frankly, they're being dishonest about this. And I think it's helpful to look at their actions on these issues as opposed to what they're saying on the campaign trail. Rob Woodall supported the House ACA repeal bill last year. And Karen Handel, these are our two competitive congressional districts right now. Karen Handel wasn't yet in Congress, but she told John Ossoff in a debate in advance of that special election that the House Republican ACA bill covered pre-existing conditions better than current law. So Experts have disagreed with that. They've disagreed with that since the debate happened and continue to in subsequent plans that have been released. I just think that the bills that they have voted on are in stark contrast to what Republicans are saying their position is on the trail.
So Republicans do have provisions in various measures that they've looked at, introduced, whatever, that they say address pre-existing conditions. But if I'm right about this, and maybe you, Kyle, you, Andy, or maybe tomorrow, Kevin, their provisions typically have big loopholes, like unless a state decides that the insurers in their state don't have to insure pre-existing conditions, or the insurance companies can make a decision to some extent of whether they want to cover pre-existing. Is that right?
Yeah. Well, so there's a standalone bill that has been kind of floating around the House, but nobody's voted on yet, a Republican bill that essentially says, you know, insurance companies, you have to cover pre-existing conditions, even if the health care law doesn't stand. And that's something that Karen Handel actually talked about in a attack on her opponent yesterday in a statement, basically calling Lucy McBath dishonest for saying that, that Handel, you know, didn't support covering pre-existing conditions. But my understanding of that Republican bill that, that Handel has signed on to is that there are some who have said, well, yes, insurers would have to, couldn't turn people down, but there was a big loophole, Andy, correct me if I'm wrong, that says they actually don't have to cover it?
It's, yeah, I mean, I've seen various criticisms of it. Like, they may have to cover it, but that doesn't say anything about what they would charge you if you had diabetes versus somebody who doesn't. And also, they could cover it, but not, they could cover you as a someone with a pre-existing condition, but maybe not your diabetes.
In the end, it becomes a political problem. Going back to what we said, coverage of pre-existing conditions is by far the most popular thing that has come out of this now years-long healthcare debate. So who in their right mind wants to be against covering pre-existing conditions? But a lot of policy has to follow for
right.
it to work.
And what works, what we have now is working on this issue. On this issue, Obamacare, Affordable Care Act, does work.
But think about it. If you're a Republican, this is so, things have changed at such a head-spinning pace. You know, in 2010, back when Republicans took over the House, people were so angry about Obamacare. They were packing town hall events, booting Democrats out of office because they hated Obamacare so much. Two-thirds of the American public didn't approve of it. And all of a sudden, you know, Republicans finally have the votes, or they thought they had the votes, to repeal this law. And all of a sudden, the public decides, no, hey, actually, we really like portions of this law. It's hard to be a Republican when all of a sudden, oh, wait, you have to contort yourself to agree with certain parts of this law that you long hated.
Well, yeah. And the other part about it, of course, is that, I mean, in the end, going all the way back to when President Obama, you know, pushed this through, the debate was really about, did we have the obligation as a country and as taxpayers to make sure everybody who wanted health insurance could have it? Or was it more, look, people are on their own and ought to fend for themselves, and it's sort of that
no
conservative
mandate, no,
right.
no government mandate.
Yeah, yeah, the government's not can't solve every problem, and it was sort of those two debates. Now it's sort of really morphed and changed into a much more complicated situation.
Is there anything else? I'm trying to think. I mean, I think we've covered pre-existing conditions fairly well. I will say this, Kevin. And I don't like to make this show about us, as in the media, very often, although I did yesterday. I think it's because this week I'm feeling particularly the wrath of the president, who seems to blame the media for what happened in Pittsburgh over the weekend. And I grant you, I may not be being fair to him, but it does hurt. So here's where the media plays such a crucial role. If you have people who have voted against ACA, against individual mandates, against pre-existing conditions in Congress over and over, where else are people going to learn the reality of that or the nuances? And I grant you there are some nuances in terms of the Republican plan here and there, except through journalism. Yes, Kevin?
I would agree. In fact, one of the things that I believe, and I don't think I could prove this, is that the reason that certain idea of expanding Medicaid and the Affordable Care Act have become more popular is because of more media coverage. Is people have learned about things, they've become more insightful, they understand the issue better, and they're demanding more of their politicians and their leaders because they understand the complicated problem better because we've spent so much time covering it.
All right, Kyle, let me ask you. This doesn't have to do specifically with the campaign and promises and policies that are part of the election. But when Congress decided to eliminate the individual mandate, why didn't Obamacare just start to collapse then? Why is it that the exchanges are able to, in some cases, reduce the cost of insurance this year, in other cases, make very small increases? What now is keeping this whole program up and running?
Well, I think it really has to do with the financial assistance that comes along with the policies in the Affordable Care Act. So it was sort of a carrot and a stick approach. And the carrot in help getting a health insurance plan if you have income under four times the poverty line, that is enough of an incentive along with having health coverage and having a little bit of security and peace of mind about your financial situation as it relates to your health. Those things, I think, continue to drive why people want health coverage. And I think what you see from voters is that they just want the partisan stuff to go away and for politicians to come together and make policy that just gets this right.
And it appears, Andy, in terms of what Kyle is saying, that Americans have not suggested that they really want those skinny plans that offer them minimal coverage and exclude any number of conditions. They seem to be going into the exchanges and buying the full deal.
Right. And we expected a big drop off in the exchange this past year, but we didn't get it. It was pretty close to the same number. Well over 400,000 Georgians signed up. And I think it is about pre-existing conditions in the sense that just about every family has somebody in that family with some kind of health condition. And people get that. They get it on an emotional level, but they also get it on a financial level if they lose that coverage.
All right. We've only got a couple minutes left for this discussion. But as I think through what we have talked about and what I have neglected to bring up, there is one issue that I have not brought up that I do think deserves at least a couple minutes before we move on today. Stacey Abrams says from day one, she'll go for Medicaid expansion. Now, she clarifies, she knows that she can't go in and sign an executive order establishing the Medicaid expansion. She says she'll start working on it if she's elected from day one. But the legislature a few sessions ago decided to take the control of Medicaid expansion out of the hands of the governor and put it in the hands of the legislature. With a Republican legislature, Andy, why does she think that she can get them to expand Medicaid when it's been anathema to so many Republicans in Georgia?
Well, I think two things are at play. I mean, she told me in an interview that she felt that there were that actually a lot of Republicans came up to her and told her that we wish we could do Medicaid expansion, but the political landscape, in other words, the leadership in the state, was saying no to it. So I think she feels like there's more pent-up Republican desire to do this. And I will also say that it could be that if she is elected, that there could be a compromise with Republicans in the sense of adopting work requirements for anybody who would be a beneficiary. These low-income adults would have to fulfill a work requirement in order to get this new expanded Medicaid coverage. I mean, some states have done that. It cuts down, certainly, on the number of people who get the new Medicaid benefits, but it could be a middle ground that she could strike with Republicans that could make it work.
Things about the politics. I think what Andy's suggesting on the work requirement, would give the Republicans some cover that they may need, Republicans who might be looking to this to solve some of the state's problems. And then I think it would be more accurate to say, help me here, that Governor Deal more or less assented to the legislature having control of whether or not to expand Medicaid.
Well, it wasn't, sure.
I mean, I know they had to pass the bill and everything, but the message was clear that we're going to make this as hard to do as we can.
Yeah, I mean, that's my point. By the way, I think establishing a work condition might, in fact, win some Republicans over. But if Stacey Abrams wants to pass a Medicaid expansion, she better make sure she better be careful about that, because unless she can pass it with all Republican votes, tomorrow there are going to be Democrats in the legislature that will hear nothing about a work requirement for Medicaid.
Sure. But they're still in the minority, and it looks like they will be even after this election.
But think of the political position that would put them in.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, Bill, I don't see it that way. I think it would be very hard for a Democrat in the Georgia legislature to argue against expanding Medicaid.
Okay.
Or they could put it to a referendum and like Idaho and Nebraska are doing, and give it to the voters to decide.
All right. We are pretty much out of time. Kyle, as you sit up there in Washington and work on health care issues for the think tank you're associated with, is there anything last thing that we need to address here with about a minute we have left?
Well, I think the one, just to add a little to this discussion on work requirements and Medicaid, work requirements I don't think are a condition for getting Medicaid in a red state. Republicans have accepted Medicaid expansion in the past without a work requirement. But another piece of leverage potentially for a Governor Abrams over a Republican administration, if you don't get through this next year, is a tax bill that passed last year that cuts income taxes in the state by two steps. The second step in that tax cut requires a joint resolution from the legislature and the governor to sign it. That may be a piece of legislation she looks to hold up. She hasn't gotten an agreement.
Right, we could get some bargaining power. All right, listen, we are completely out of time for this discussion. Kevin Riley, Andy Miller, Kyle Hayes, Tamar Hellerman, thank you so much for being part of this conversation. By the way, if you don't think that conservatives want Medicaid expansion, we almost have never agreed with one of our favorite tweeters, Ted Barfield. But Ted Barfield just sent us a tweet saying, it's not a popular sentiment and tough to sell politically, but folks with expensive pre-existing conditions need a public option and not insurance. They essentially need transfer for payments. But he's all for, basically, the expansion of Medicaid for pre-existing conditions. All right, Ted. We got on the same page. This is Political Rewind. We'll be right back.
On the next Fresh Air, Jonah Hill, co-star of Superbad, Moneyball, and The Wolf of Wall Street. He wrote and directed the new film Mid-90s about a group of skateboarders in the mid-90s. That's the period when Jonah Hill was skateboarding, but he was never great.
Because to be great at skateboarding, you have to be willing to slam on your face down 10 stairs on concrete over and over and over and over.
Join us.
Fresh Air is this afternoon at 3 on GPB and gpbnews.org.
Welcome back to Political Rewind. We're in Savannah because tonight we're going to do the show. We're going to record tomorrow's show in front of a live audience down here. We're excited about that. By the way, I've just been told by Tom and Robert that our reporter Stephen Fowler has just completed interviews with both Stacey Abrams and Brian Kemp. And Robert tells me we're going to put him online some point tomorrow when we get back to Atlanta, if you want to hear what they are saying with less than a week to go until the election. All right. Because we're in Savannah, we wanted to talk to the woman who has been our host here and who has absolutely helped us bring this show down here. Cuffy Sullivan, president of the League of Women Voters of Coastal Georgia. Cuffy, I wanted to get a couple of, first of all, thank you for coming into the studio down here.
Of course, it's great to be here.
So tell us a little bit, as we're a week now away from the election, what's the mood among voters down here? I tell us how much early voting, how excited do people seem to you? Talk about that.
We've been killing it with the early voting. We are set to break presidential records from 2016. It's really exciting. Our local Board of Elections has been doing a great job with early voting, Saturday and Sunday voting, with having lots of different locations around town. I early voted yesterday. I was in and out in 20 minutes. I had another friend who was voting at another location. It took her 2.5 hours, but but she got it done. So I think there is a lot of enthusiasm, and we're seeing that with the early voting. The numbers I got today is we've got about 20,000 early voters and almost 8,000 early absentee ballots that have been sent out.
Yeah, I'm looking at numbers from Chatham County right now. It says 22,213 as of close of business yesterday. 93% more early voters than in 2014, the last time we had a midterm election. What's interesting is to look at the demographics, and that's one of the things we're going to talk to our panel about tonight, but I've got you here right now. White vote is about 46% of the people who've turned out in Chatham. Our white voter is about 44%. Our African American, 58% are women, 40% are men. So what do those numbers suggest to you about how this vote could be going?
Well, I think it's going to be close. We have a lot of enthusiasm for both sides, for the governor's race. We've just held two fantastic forums with our representatives from the 1st Congressional District for the U.S. House of Representatives and then for the Georgia representative. They sold out faster than Coachella. I mean, I think people are really excited about learning more about the candidates, not just, you know, seeing what their friends are voting for, but they're actually getting out there. We've revamped our website. We have an awesome voter guide on there, a voter toolkit that shows you everything you need to know. That's at lwvcga.org.
We'll post that. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Thank you. Got to get a plug in. And we're just seeing lots of excitement. I think the other thing that's curious to me is there's been so much focus on voting. It's not necessarily been from a party or a candidate, just voting in general. And I think whatever happens, no matter what side of the political divide you're on, that having an engaged electoral, a healthy electorate is just a good thing no matter
spoken
what.
Spoken like a representative of the nonpartisan League of Women Voters. Very good.
You betcha. You betcha.
So one of the things that we've talked about on the show with some regularity is the mantra about politics. It used to be all politics is local. That has not been the case since Donald Trump became president. And in this midterm, even in the last days, as much as Georgia's incumbents, particularly in Congress, have tried to maintain this as a local race about state issues, Brian Kemp has tried to do that. Stacey Abrams has been careful not to attack Trump particularly often. It does feel like this race is becoming nationalized in the final days. You've got Mike Pence coming in here on Thursday. You're going to have the president not far away in Macon. Are there either big national issues you think matter to people most? Do you have some specific, you know, coastal Georgia issues? What's driving this election?
We do. I think a lot of it, as you just spent a show talking about, is certainly Medicare expansion and health care. That's a biggie. I think for us, too, offshore drilling is a big issue for us down here. Our whole economy is built on the coast. And we've got one candidate who is saying, let's look at renewables. And we've got another one saying, you know, we really kind of need to see what's out there. So I think there's a lot of passion about that issue specifically. I also think that there's just been so much effort. It's just been on everyone's mind that just getting out and voting after a time of voter morbidity, I don't know what else to call it, voter apathy, that it's exciting to be part of this effort, this excitement of getting out there. So I do feel that it will in some way be a little bit of a testament to what's going on nationally. But we do have some specific Georgia issues that are coastal Georgia issues that are important to us.
Cindy Hilla, who runs our bureau down here, said to me a little while ago that at some point this proposed spaceport is going to be one of the big local issues. I haven't seen it pop up is it popping up in the first district congressional race?
Not at all.
Buddy Carter, Lisa Rink
I don't even think it wasn't even mentioned.
Tell us what is this all about?
You know, I don't even know. I have no clue. I haven't been following it. I feel like it's, you know.
Well, there's a plan to put a spaceport in Camden County.
Yes.
And to use it to launch commercial rockets that opponents are fearful will fly over on their trajectory, their launch trajectory over Cumberland Island, mm-hmm. other barrier islands in Georgia. And of course, there's great criticism of that, as well as those who are arguing that the state needs the commercial benefits of something like that. And the reason I bring it up at all is I'm wondering in coastal Georgia whether the environment, concerns about global warming, about the rising seas, may be a little bit more present than they are in metro Atlanta, where we live every day.
Right. And of course, that's, you know, we've had three big hurricanes. You know, our friends on Tybee Island are you know, they can't even get their house fixed from the last one before the next one comes and hits them again. So I think, of course, the offshore drilling is much more of a immediate concern than a spaceport that may or may not get built as it
relates. We should point out that Governor Deal, who has certainly been, you know, has the power now under the Trump administration to authorize offshore drilling, has not done so.
Right. And we're very thankful for that at the moment. Right. So, but that could always change.
What do we expect is going to happen tonight at our event?
Well, it looks like we have a great crowd. We're thrilled to have you back. I know we were your first on the road live broadcast.
You were. So. You spoiled it.
Oh, my gosh.
You gave us such a great turnout.
Well, I think we're going to have another great turnout tonight. You've got a great cast of characters on your panel. I think we're going to be talking about some great issues and can't wait to see it.
The Al Scott, the chairman of Chatham County Commission, will be here, and former state senator, who is still one of the state's really outstanding political leaders. Eric Johnson, former Republican candidate for governor, also a longtime state senator, will be with us. Susan Catron, the editor of Savannah News, is going to be here. And Jim Galloway is nursing a little bit of a cold. He's taking medications, Cuffy, but he said he would not miss the chance
to
be here with you and the people of Savannah. So we look forward to joining you. We're going to have that show live on Facebook starting at 7 o'clock. So if you want to watch it as it happens live, we'll be there. And then, of course, that show will be broadcast in our usual time slot tomorrow at 2. We'll see you later tonight, Cuffy.
Can't wait. Thanks, Bill.
That's about it for us here today for Political Rewind. I want to thank Robert Jimison, Tyler Morris back in Atlanta. Ellen Reinhardt helped us get this whole thing together as well. And Tom Faust, of course, our senior producer, really is the guy who has to make all of this happen. Thanks to all of you. We're going to be heading over to the venue in a little while and get set for another Political Rewind. The work just never stops. See you later.